Welcome to The Wired Wig, demystifying tech law trends and educating about law in tomorrow's society. Hello and welcome back to The Wired Wig. My name is Annabelle Pemberton and today I'm going to be taking over the episode talking to you a bit about data protection law and the use of facial recognition in today's society. So this was inspired by my last two videos, which were of course inspired by everything that is going on in the world right now and the increased awareness around the use of facial recognition in policing. So only this week, IBM's CEO, he spoke out very publicly saying that IBM will not be supporting facial recognition. They will not be producing the software themselves. And we're going to be talking about that later in this podcast. I wanted to really start off by firstly actually introducing how I got into data protection. If you're listening as a law student and you're just a bit interested how I fell into this world. So I got into data protection by actually undertaking an internship in Straightforward Business Consultancy. And I did this at a startup that also happened to be needing help with their own data protection. It's a startup where we are processing a vast amount of data because we work with various other clients and help them process their data. So they are in the position of collecting this data from their customers. We create dashboards and we allow them to send out campaigns which are actionable based on their real-time monitoring of how their customers are behaving. So in my role on a day-to-day basis, I am the Deputy Data Protection Officer for the company. If you don't know what a data protection officer is, basically they're someone in the organization who holds the responsibility for making sure that data is processed in a legal way. They do this by making sure they understand all the data flows in the company, how data is being collected and then processed, maintaining a register of all the processing that's occurring in the company. So for example, for me, because I step in on tasks when our main DPO cannot step in on those tasks, I talk to our clients about their data protection requirements, talking about the use cases they want to perform and the data they want to collect, but then also checking that they have collected consents, for example, or if they're doing it under legitimate interest, they've considered thinking about why can we collect this data and what is the purpose for how are we going to collect it? Is it intrusive into that customer's rights? So I don't want to go too deep into data protection and GDPR today because I think it's important to understand that there is this realm of law that's around our data and there's a realm of law around privacy to really understand why it's important to consider why there is law around facial recognition and those different types of data that can be used in policing. So in my video this week on Instagram and last week as well, I was talking about facial recognition. If we let facial recognition get too out of control, then we could start to live in a more George Orwellian society. And it's one of those situations where we as a people and society have to make a decision whether this is a society we actually want to live in. These decisions are partially made through the law, but they're also made through how citizens and society reacts to these regulations and if they're going to push them out or if they're going to push these technologies away. And it's going to be really interesting to see that if people know more that they're going to be subject to facial recognition, for example, whether they're going to be covering their faces when they go to public events, whether they're going to be stopping going to their normal shops, whether they're going to be changing their routine when they know that cameras are going to be surveillancing them more. There was one important statistic that I mentioned in the video this week, and that is that in London alone, there are 68 cameras, so CCTV cameras for every 1,000 people in the capital. Now, this was a statistic that did really shock me. I didn't realize how surveillance the capital was. So I started to look more into the uses of facial recognition and I really got very intrigued how it could be used in policing. Now we can think about this in two, maybe three ways. So the first is that facial recognition is completely bad. It should be banned and we shouldn't be using it at all. The other extreme is that facial recognition is inherently good because it allows society to be protected from those people who you don't want to be in society and putting them in prison. It really depends on your opinion of the world. But the middle view is that we should use these technologies, but we need to be careful in how we use them, and we need to balance the situations we use them for. And I like to consider myself as part of this third group, as someone who can see the technology is really exciting and it can have such profound effects on society, and it can be very impactful and change people's lives for the better. But we're just not quite there with facial recognition, and we're going to talk today a little bit about why. So during the video, I was talking about the usage of facial recognition in two places. So the first was in Oxford Street in London, and the second was by the South Wales Police at a peaceful arms fair. At the moment, facial recognition is also being used in the ongoing peaceful protests in response to the death of George Floyd. It has been shown that not all of these protests are peaceful, so I can see here that some people would step in and say, and this is why we need facial recognition to stop these criminals from committing these crimes. But that's when we need to sort of step back and think, okay, but if we're allowing that, then what else are we going to allow the law to give way for? And this is what we really call the sort of watershed argument. So if we allow this to happen now, then what else is going to be allowed? And when does it stop? Even though we can recognize that people have been harmed, police officers have had things thrown at them, looting is a crime and assault is a crime, and we can't ignore those factors. But pulling down a statue when it's actually a slave trader in the past, is that really a crime? I understand this is damage to private property, well, public property, but given the historical nature of this statue, do we constitute it as a crime anymore? And it's when we have these sort of gray zones and society thinking one way about these people who have done this, then it becomes problematic using facial recognition in this way, because then the opinions and the views of the people who have power are then the ones who are going to control how the rest of society thinks, because they will be scared to believe otherwise. So the chief executive of IBM stated on the 9th of June 2020 that they have an intention to work with Congress in pursuit of justice and racial equity. So this is focusing on three policy areas. These include police reform, the responsible use of the technology, and broadening skills and educational opportunities. So no longer will IBM be offering facial recognition or analysis software, and they will not condone uses of any technology for mass surveillance, racial profiling, violations of basic human rights and freedoms, or any purpose which is not consistent with our values and principles of trust and transparency. So that is a direct quote from the IBM chief executive. So he is overall calling for what is stated at the moment as a national dialogue around facial recognition, which is really interesting and also very positive to see that they're putting people's human rights before their money. But what I would say is that IBM still also have the right to sell facial recognition technology for software and specific purposes, and IBM is also a consultancy company, so they can still also use facial recognition when they're providing consulting. Balance that as well, but overall what they are doing and speaking out against this use of facial recognition by policing in a way that is discriminate towards one group of people, they're calling that out as wrong, which is exactly what we need from these large companies with such influence. Microsoft has done the same, but it's interesting because they're considering both sides. So the Microsoft president, Brad Smith, he's stated that it is a technology that can be deployed in literally an Orwellian fashion. But he states that, I think whenever you want to ban a technology, you also have to ask, what are the potentials for it to do good as well? And so then the question is, how do you strike a balance? I don't think that you can strike that balance by banning all use. You can strike that balance by banning the harmful use. And I agree with what Brad is saying here, to be honest, that we don't want to over-regulate these technologies. We don't want to ban the use, because what banning typically does in the law is it actually encourages use in a more harmful way, because then it's just not regulated. And there could be the potential for that to happen with facial recognition, and it's just best for us to not ban it completely, but ban the harmful use and set down guidelines and have policymakers make decisions around this instead. So I'm going to move on to this at the end of this podcast, but I thought that was important for you to start thinking as you're listening to this podcast in both ways and not thinking it's black and white. It is a sliding spectrum in this way. So then I'm going to move on to Amazon. So of course, we know Amazon is a large company, and one thing that many people don't know about Amazon is that Amazon also has their own facial recognition software, and it's called Recognition. Jeff Bezos supported the Black Lives Matter movement, but he has refused to speak about Amazon's own facial recognition technology or Recognition. And this is very interesting because there have been studies in the past that have shown the software not performing as it should, especially against people of color. So in 2018, a study from the ACLU showed concern when it incorrectly matched 28 members of Congress, it being Amazon Recognition, identifying them as people who had actually been arrested for a crime. So this is really interesting to actually see the technology that Amazon is selling right now to not be performing as it should be. The study goes on to say that they conducted their test by using the same facial recognition system that Amazon offers to the public, which anyone could use to scan for matches between images of faces. So the whole study cost them only $12 to run, and from this $12, they were able to build a database of faces using the search tool in Amazon Recognition, and this identified 25,000 publicly available photos of people who had been arrested. They then searched that database against public photos of every current member of the House and Senate. They then used the default settings that Amazon sets on Recognition, and the result was that 40% of false matches were people of color. So these are really the reasons why there are concerns. So we can see here that there is a racial bias in how this technology is working. Another study also came from MIT Media Lab, and it showed that Recognition had much more difficulty in telling the gender of female faces and darker skinned faces. And this wasn't just a problem with recognition, with facial recognition in this case. This was a problem specifically with Amazon Recognition because it was performing in a worse fashion in comparison to IBM and Microsoft. And this was just in January of last year in 2019. So in this study, it classified women as men 90% of the time, and it mistook darker skinned women for men 31% of the time. And it will be really interesting to see if this is actually improving now. So Amazon Recognition is also under scrutiny by federal lawmakers and the American Civil Liberties Union. This recognition software is just not working right now from Amazon. And while that is a shame, it's definitely something we need to talk about. So the National Institute of Standards and Technology, or NIST, also conducted a study that looked into the accuracy around facial recognition, identifying people of varied sexes, age, and racial background. So this was carried out at the end of 2019. So it might provide us an even more up-to-date version of how this technology is working. What is important about this study is that it wasn't particular to which brand the facial recognition tool was from. And I actually think, unfortunately, Amazon Recognition wasn't included in this study, but it still does show a very good insight into how this technology is working. One of the main takeaways, however, for the study is that the answer on how precise one of these tools is going to be between people of variation, so of gender, of age, of race, it's going to be the algorithm at the heart of the system. It's really going to depend on what data that application is being fed and how it's actually using that data to make decisions, which makes sense, but it's really good that there's a study that's particularly showing that. So usually it's incorrect to make a statement across algorithms because each algorithm is very individual, but NIST have identified in this study that there is empirical evidence for the existence of demographic differences in the majority of the facial recognition algorithms that they studied. So let's have a quick look into the method behind this study. So to actually perform this study, they were using facial recognition algorithms that were submitted by academic developers or industry developers. And to evaluate the different algorithms, they used four collections of photographs containing 18.27 million images of 8.49 million people. And these all came from operational databases provided by the State Department, the Department of Homeland Security, and the FBI. They then looked into how comparatively well each algorithm performed on images of people from different backgrounds. The first insight is that there's higher rates of false positives for Asian and African American faces relative to images of Caucasians. So false positives might represent a security concern depending on how the facial recognition is being used. They then looked at algorithms from different countries, and I think this is really interesting. So for example, from US developed algorithms, there were similar high rates of false positives between Asians, African Americans, and Native groups. So this included Native American, African Indian, Alaskan Indian, and Pacific Islanders. In Asian countries, when they were using Asian developed algorithms, there wasn't such a dramatic difference in false positives between Asian and Caucasian faces for algorithms developed in Asia. And this is just really interesting to see, because perhaps those facial recognition softwares were actually trained on a data set that was more suited for the society that it was working in. And they have highlighted that one possible connection and area for research is the relationship between an algorithm's performance and the data it used to train it. So exactly, we need to be looking at the data that's being put into these algorithms and making sure it's really right in that way. So we've really identified some negatives around this technology, and I really hope you're still listening. And I really hope that you're still thinking in that balanced way that I stated in the beginning, because there was one thing from this NIST study that really shows that we can have hope that in the future we could use facial recognition in a way that is balanced and make sure that it is recognizing people correctly. And that is that not all algorithms give this high rate of false positives across demographics in one-to-one matching, and those that are the most equitable and rank among the most accurate. So different algorithms perform differently. We need to balance the use of this technology. So while it doesn't appear suitable for policing at this time without having large impacts on society, it is an improving technology. So even NIST acknowledged between 2014 and 2018 that facial recognition software got 20 times better at searching a database to find a matching photograph. And this was according, of course, to NIST and their evaluation of 127 software algorithms from 39 different developers. So even though we have this study that shows that there are deficiencies and there are imbalances, facial recognition software is getting better. But this is also just a reason why we should make sure that its use is used in a proper way. And that's why we need to be responsible about the data we're putting into these tools and the data sets we're using to train it. And really, this goes back to thinking, when we're making these products, who are we making them for? And how in society there's all types of people, and that we need to accommodate these technologies for all these people. And I hope in the next few years we're going to really focus in on how we're using this technology and the purposes behind its usage. Amazon recognition maybe shouldn't be sold to the police, but it's going to be a very interesting next few months, I believe, because there is going to be harsher regulation on these tools. One thing I did want to say, and I don't think I said in the beginning, is that Microsoft, they are calling on Congress to regulate this technology. And it's not this year. They called on them to regulate this technology in 2018. So IBM is not the first company to speak out and against this technology and making sure that it's fair across society. In today's episode, we've been talking exclusively about facial recognition. However, this isn't the only technology that utilizes people's biometric data. So one other use of using biometric data is for getting into someone's property or getting into work, so for authentication. And this requires the person to actually willingly set up the account, and it makes it easier for them to access their accounts and adds additional layers of security. So we can see there that facial recognition technology in the use for authentication rather than for policing is starting to work in the right way. And I suppose this is what we are referring to when we're saying there needs to be a balancing act. I think the key question we need to really be asked is, if we're using facial recognition for policing, are we really being fair to society? And is this really the society we want to live in? When wherever we go, we're being watched, whatever we do, whoever we talk to, it's somewhere on record? Is that really the society we want? And I suppose this is a question that we need to make ourselves in society, but is ultimately going to be partially in the hands of the law as well. I hope you enjoyed this episode. I know it was a bit different because it was just me talking, and I can tell you it was very different me recording this as well. Not having someone else to record it with is very odd. So I hope it stayed focused and to the point, and you learned a bit from this episode as well, and are inspired to learn more about facial recognition. I'm Annabelle Pemberton, and you have just listened to the Wired Wig podcast, available on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, and Google Podcasts. If you have any suggestions for upcoming podcasts or different ideas of who could be on the show, we are open to suggestions at the Wired Wig page on Anchor, where you can message us, as well as messaging us directly through our Instagram profile at the Wired Wig. As always, if you liked what you just heard, be sure to follow this account on Spotify and follow The Wired Wig on Instagram for the latest tech law news and updates.